Ready to walk?
Yeah, I'm ready to roll.
Ready to roll.
Welcome back to the 5 to 9. Can you believe we're saying welcome back?
No, I absolutely can. Once we said we were going to do this thing, we knew that this was going to keep going.
I think once you do something after the first time, though, it actually makes it real.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, everyone says consistency is key.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to show up. Sierra and I will tell you in episode 1, we struggled. We struggled working together. We struggled balancing each other off. And, you know, anytime you start something new, you have to kind of understand there's going to be obstacles and hurdles. But we're really excited to get into episode 2. When we were thinking about episode 1 and how we want to really introduce dream culture, but more importantly, the 5 to 9, Sierra and I were thinking about what did we really go through in our first 2 years of being entrepreneurs? And what were some of the lessons that we've learned, our takeaways, but truly experiences that have shaped us and what our brand is today? Sierra, what are we talking about here today?
Today, just to put it in simple terms, everything happens for a reason.
You're going to believe very quickly once you take that leap of faith, if you haven't already. Everything that happens to you as an entrepreneur happens for a reason. You have to believe it. And today we're going to break down a personal story that we experienced very early on when we developed Dream Culture. And just to give a brief backstory, we had already started our branding agency, Stripe Zero. And once we kind of ran into, I would say, an epiphany moment when we realized we don't truly want to scale an agency, right? There's something more in store for us, which got us thinking, how can we start a holding company, a media company?
We were both involved with a lot of things. And the answer to doing that was, how can we put it all together?
Yeah, build a network of brands that we are passionate about.
Right.
You know, very early on in, Dream Culture's, conception, all we really cared about, Sierra, was I wanted to create a creative community. You wanted to, put on events, and maybe you want to speak to that a little bit, but we wanted to have a community of creatives and entrepreneurs, people that thought like us, people that experienced the same things as us, come together under one umbrella, and we all can support each other, help each other grow, help each other reach our dreams.
Right.
And we had people early on love the message behind our brand. Right. The message we would share with everyone is our mission is to humanize success. What does success truly look like? So today we're going to give you a glimpse of kind of the early stages of our story. So with that said, Sierra, why don't you take everyone back?
Yeah. So I think we have to set the timeline of where we were. This is what, a year and a half ago?
Just about. Yep.
About a year and a half ago. And you get connected with?
Well, so we were working with 2 clients that were in the alcohol space. Mm-hmm. And funny enough, the reason and how we even got these clients was from an Instagram story.
I was making gin that day in the garage.
Sierra was making gin. Mm-hmm. I created an Instagram story just literally talking about what I was going through as an entrepreneur. And an old buddy of mine from middle school reached out. His code name we're going to use is Alex.
Okay. All right.
So Alex reached out to me on Instagram and he, said, hey, I love what you're putting out. And that was like, yeah, awesome, man. Like, I haven't talked to you in years. No fallout. Just life happens. And I was like, hey, man, like, what are you up to? He said, hey, I'm starting an alcohol company with a few of my buddies. And funny enough, Sierra was working on her gin at the same day. So I was like, hey, I have a branding marketing agency. Sierra's also involved in alcohol, and they were looking for a branding partner. So it was just like perfect timing.
You did what you normally do. You just connected everything and everyone in a crazy way.
I connected the dots, which also goes back to everything happens for a reason, right?
Well, you're just a good connector.
Regardless. So we got connected to him, right?
Yeah.
And very early on in our working relationship, we did a great job. We put together a huge presentation, really impressed him. And I feel like we really came in and provided a different level of care for their business that maybe they would have expected from working with like a random agency. Right.
Well, to be honest, they were 5 boys who, I mean, they just graduated college.
Right.
They needed a little direction. Yeah.
Yeah. And but we were the same age as them. And
yeah.
But we just had a different understanding of how to market and branding. And so it was a perfect fit. Where I want to go with this, though, is Alex, who is running the marketing side of the business, also knew what we were doing with Dream Culture.
Yeah.
And sort of our mission with And Alex was like, hey, I have a buddy of mine that actually grew up in the same area as us, who's doing really well and is looking to invest into different companies. And he, you know, basically he wanted to connect us. So in that initial phone call, so codename Alex, who's going to be codenamed, we got to give, we'll call him Barry, Alex and Barry. So I get on the call with Barry.
We love Alex and.
Yeah, Alex and Barry are phenomenal people. We're just using code names out of respect because we haven't talked about sharing the story, but it's more about the journey of our brand and where it started. So anyways, Barry and I get on a phone call and I'm telling him my vision for Dream Bulger. And I'm sharing like all the details and the plan and all of this. And as we're talking, there is immediate spark. We hit it off immediately. And by the end of that 45-minute phone call, he said, I'm going to be involved in this. And I remember getting off that phone call, and I felt like I was almost in tears because I came in and hugged you. I was like, this is it. Like, this is the moment. Because there was a lot of different things we just had.
Well, you were definitely on a bit of a roller coaster, I think, trying to figure out how to balance finances. That was at the very beginning. Yeah. Just quit your six-figure salary job, and you were adjusting. So it was a little rough. And I remember you came in and you're like, this is it. Like, I finally found it. And I'm like, hallelujah. Thank God.
I know.
Whatever. Let's go.
But that's the thing. It's like, once you actually commit yourself to like going on this path of being an entrepreneur, you start looking at everything as an opportunity.
Yes.
If you don't, then I don't know how you can grow or
network. You'll end up closing doors.
Yeah, exactly. And so I make sure every door stays open. And so when I got on a call with Barry, I remember getting off and I was so excited. So what happens next?
Okay. Tell us how we get from Barry to Mark. Mark is the big dog in this story.
Okay.
We have Barry, and Barry's great. He's awesome. But Mark's the dog.
Mark's the dog. So let me break this down. So basically,
where are they located?
Yeah. So Barry and Mark are business partners, and they're up in Boston, Rhode Island. Barry and Alex are business partners, and I like to call them franchise. And when we started talking to them, I think they were really invested in us and what we were building on the agency side, but they started to really come around to the idea of the media side. Alex and Barry were going to Montana. They lived in the Northeast. They're going to Montana working on some business deals. And I actually helped them create a deck to help them secure those deals. That's going to play an important role. And so I helped them create this deck for a business opportunity they're pursuing in Montana. Mm-hmm. And at the time, Barry was asking when I wanted to fly out to meet with them, meet over dinner, talk through the investment opportunity, all of it. And so initially they were like, hey, we'll fly you out to Montana. You can join us on the road. And in my mind, I'm thinking, are you shitting me? I'm going to go to Montana to meet with two investors and travel and see Buffalo. And I mean, I've never been there. I was like, oh my God, this is a dream. This is so freaking cool.
I love Yellowstone.
I know. So Montana didn't work out. It was too chaotic. They were dealing with a lot of business. So we ended up waiting, I think, 2 more weeks. And then they flew me out to Boston. Now, Sierra wasn't in Boston yet. Mm-hmm. So they flew us both out to Boston. But before they flew us out, what was sort of the feeling that we were kind of experiencing, kind of getting off the phone call with Barry, and then leading up to us actually going to Boston? Now, I don't know if we've clarified. We're talking to investors for our startup company.
There's no deal on the table. This is solely just an opportunity for us to go and meet these guys and just connect with them as people. And Jared and I are like, cool. We're excited about this because if we can do one thing, we can connect with you as a person. We don't even need to talk business yet. It's just simply getting to know one another. And that is like the easiest thing in the world for both of us to do with anybody. So we were already really excited about the opportunity. We were going to fly somewhere new. It was a cool experience. And it was something we'd never really done before.
We've never pitched any of our businesses in front of a team of investors
in a casual way, the way that it was set up.
I think you just summarized that perfectly. So coming in, you can just feel there's a sense of excitement that we both had there was really no nerves. I think that I wasn't truly prepared to talk through investment finances around a brand that I didn't really truly know its potential and value yet. And I think we'll come back to that. We'll come back to the realizations. But
yeah, I think before we, you know, go with where this was going, let's just lay it out on the table. This was a big deal.
Huge.
The deal that we are about to tell everyone what we were offered was massive. This was not like...
And no one knows about it. Even like our personal friends and
my mother, my mother to this day still does not know about this deal.
Yeah. And this was a deal
of a lifetime for us. I mean, at that point in our life, it was.
Yeah. And I think we did everything in our power to be prepared. I think we did everything in our power to really capitalize on the opportunity. Like looking back, I think that we truly made the most of that experience and we took it to the end.
And then we lost it all.
Yeah.
All right. So let's go backwards. Let's tell everybody what the deal was.
Let's get to Boston.
Okay. We're in Boston.
We're now in Boston. I have now spent a full day with Barry and Mark, and then Sierra flies in the next day.
And while you were there, you were learning the inner workings of what it is that they do as
franchise
owners. Correct. And that is a very interesting industry. It's a tough industry, but it's a very interesting industry, and it's very different from what we do.
Yes.
So you were really like in the weeds, in the stores, learning what they do on a day-to-day basis.
Yes. And so as I'm getting acclimated to what they do, there wasn't really an opportunity that first day to really talk about what I do. I just was able to work with the clients we had and let them sort of see by action. So we didn't really talk business. It was very casual. And I wasn't trying to come in on day one and talk about business. I was just trying
there
to get
was
a
no need.
There was no trying to get a feel for everyone, let everyone know like what my personality is, who I am. I was just trying to feel everyone out. Yeah. So with Mark and I, we were really just kind of getting some basic, I don't know, like getting to know each other. Like we didn't really get too much on day one, mm-hmm. but day one, we started kind of laying out what the week would look like. Yeah. So we were talking about going out to dinner. We were talking about, you know, where we were gonna, you know, basically talk business. And so anyways, all of this sort of prequel, sort of everything beforehand, I remember you and I went to Barry's house once you came into town, and we were talking about them coming on board. Like we were starting to finally get to the part where they're gonna join us.
Well, so Barry tells us we are going to be going to a dinner. And we're like, okay, great, let's go to dinner. And he's like, no, this is the dinner where Mark basically like decides if he wants to do business with you. Like it's a casual dinner. You don't talk anything about the business.
Well, he didn't tell us that ahead of time.
He kind of did though. He was warming us up too. We were preparing for this to be the end all be all.
Well, so you, me and Barry
uh-huh.
drove from where he was at, I think in like Rhode Island, so like 45 minutes into the city to go have dinner in Boston. Mm-hmm. And it was Mark and his girlfriend. It was Barry and then us two. And dinner was phenomenal. The food was great. But, you know, we were just sort of all shooting the shit. I definitely felt a sense of nerve. And the reason being is I didn't want to waste the opportunity. I didn't know what to do coming into it. I wasn't prepped ahead of time. I just know how to be me.
Yeah.
You know, I just know how to be me. And
well, that's all we could do.
That's all we can do. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I tried to do my best of, you know, keeping the conversations cool, but it was weird. During dinner, not once was any business brought up at all.
Well, and I remember you would try and interject it a little bit, and you did it in a very like sly, like, you know, like nonchalant way. Mm-hmm. I remember he would immediately just like go the other way.
Yeah.
And I did think that was weird too. And I can see you were getting nervous. I looked at Jared's hands under the table and he's like, his palms are sweaty.
Yeah. I'm like, am I fucking this up right now?
We're eating spaghetti. His palms are sweaty.
You don't even listen to Eminem.
That's the one line everyone knows.
You can't pull lines from someone you don't like.
I can. That's the one line you know. And I remember I'm like, Jared, calm down. It's going to be okay. Let's just be you.
I was nervous.
That's what we did the rest of the dinner. And it was mm-hmm. great.
I was really nervous. And I remember I go to the bathroom and then Barry comes to the bathroom and I said, hey, Barry, how do you think it's going? And he goes, dude, it's going great. Like he made it seem like it was going phenomenal. And funny enough, Barry goes, hey, Mark really likes cigars. I'm going to slip you one of these. You know, show it to him after dinner and, you know, ask him to, you know, light it up later or whatever. And so we get to the end of dinner. Honestly, I give it a solid 8 out of 10, like overall. And I say 8 out of 10 because
dinner or the conversation.
Well, the conversations were great. Like that, we did have great conversations, but it wasn't why we were there. To me,
I think you were having a hard time. You were like, you wanted that security blanket. Okay. You I mean, in all honesty, you wanted that to be.
I came here to bring on two people who wanted to invest in us. That's what was talked about beforehand. So when, at what point do we talk about that? So anyways, I don't know if there's anything else we need to say about dinner, because after dinner, I remember vividly, I'm walking with Mark side by side and I grab out cigars and go, hey, thanks for dinner. Cause he paid for dinner and it was wonderful. You know, hey, I whip it out. Hey, thanks for dinner. And I ask him, you know, hey, when would be a good time tomorrow before we head out of town for us to talk? And I think he maybe have proactively brought it up to me. I don't remember exactly who asked what, but we ended up basically agreeing to meet the next morning for brunch.
Looked at you and said, save that cigar for tomorrow. And that's when we were like, tomorrow it's happening. Like, it's going to go down tomorrow. So we slept like babies that night. Okay. I had been up all day. I literally flooded in that morning and I'm like, let's get to our hotel and let's get sleep. So we go to bed and we wake up the next morning and we're like, okay, we have one more chance to see him before we fly back home. We have to make this worth it. So we meet at
the seafood restaurant. Seafood brunch restaurant, which was awesome. Quick little story. Yeah. And us took an oyster shot afterwards and he threw up and it was the funniest thing ever. But in all like lightheartedness, it was so freaking funny and just set them like, it lightened the mood up completely. This was the moment where we finally had to talk about numbers and talk about the investment and talk about the timeline of return on the investment and et cetera. And I remember Sierra and Barry were sort of kind of there at the table. But it was, the conversation was not between them. It was me, just answering question. If you know me, I'm the one who asked the questions. So me having to answer, I'm like, oh, fuck, am I rambling? Am I saying the wrong thing? I'm like, fuck.
This was the time where you had to answer.
This was the time, though, I had to give the most clear and concise answers and show that what you're investing in is the right investment.
Yeah.
It's not just us anymore. Here is the business plan.
Yeah.
And the hardest part about creating a plan is anything can change in a plan, but you have to show the foundation and the vision for what you're trying to build. And so we did lay that out extremely well coming into it. We pitched the idea of the events and the community and this brand of humanizing success. I mean, everything we're doing now, we pitched, but it wasn't, I don't think, as flushed out as it is today, which we'll get to.
We're going to get there. Basically, Mark is like, I love it. At the end of it, he gives you like a verbal, we're going to do this. There were still no final numbers put down on a piece of paper.
There was nothing on a piece of paper, but I came in asking, I think, for $50,000 as the investment asked.
Uh-huh.
Mark actually is the one who said that's not enough. And basically, I had to name my number.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what he kept saying. Name your number. Give me your number. Yeah. And you were like, I feel like you had nerves dripping down. Because when you're starting out, I think it's hard to be like, what am I worth? What is
something I have? I had no idea what I was worth. I mean, keep in mind, I'm a entrepreneur with a big dream, a lot of optimism. But at the end of the day, what do I have on the balance sheet? I don't know what the hell I'm worth.
Well, zero. Frankly, it was zero.
But so anyways, I remember that vividly now. It's like,
but the 10th. Give me your number.
I finally said
$250,000.
$50,000. And
he probably could have said a million.
He looked at me and goes, okay. He just wanted me to say a number.
Yeah.
He just wanted me to be straight up and direct and give him a number. And, you know, looking back, I learned in that moment, it doesn't matter how uncomfortable a conversation can be for you. As long as you're direct, honest, and you just share what's on your mind, the worst thing someone can say is no. But I was afraid of being rejected and hearing no.
Yeah.
And so I really was trying to appease everyone in the room, including ourselves, but in them. And I was just, I was a young, not stupid.
You're naive.
But naive. I was naive.
No one really prepares you for a conversation like that. There's not a course or a class on, you know, what you should value yourself at and how to ask for that from somebody. Asking, can you give me money is a lot to ask for.
Absolutely.
It's a lot.
So we, after lunch, that's where we celebrate the oyster shot.
We take our oyster shotter, we go to the airport, and we're like, let's go home.
Yeah.
Let's go.
I think we got a lobster roll.
Business is done. We've got our seafood. We can exit Boston.
Absolutely.
Let's get out of that cold motherfucking city. We get home.
And we start preparing to move to Rhode Island. We get home, and now it's about, okay, what's next? And there was always, I think there was always this idea that Sierra and I would potentially move to where they're at, where they currently work and operate out of their existing office in one of their franchises. And that way they could help mentor us. They could help provide, some of the things that they couldn't from afar, which is their time, which is allowing us to network and connect and grow.
Well, so part of the deal with the $250K was you quit your jobs. Aaron doesn't have to take on as many clients, so we are both able to free up our time. We will give you both full-time salaries each, and basically we would dedicate most of our time into their business. That's what came with the salaries.
I would take dedicate most of the time.
We never came up with what the time would be. That's
the thing. So the deal was $250,000, 2 six-figure salaries, one for me and one for Sierra. Also health insurance and benefits, and like we're going to be on their payroll. Mm-hmm. And so that way the $250,000 will go only towards the business.
Yep.
And that way we can then have a security to basically run the show.
The one caveat was we have to move to Boston.
Yeah. We had to move to Boston / Rhode Island. It was kind of like where it was in Rhode Island, I think it was Manchester. There's nothing in Manchester. But so anyways, we're now preparing.
Yeah.
And as Sierra said earlier, this is the deal of a lifetime. Mm-hmm. When someone says they're going to write you a check for $250,000, 2 six-figure salaries.
Like, I'm preparing to log on to work and quit my job. Like, I'm literally thinking in my head, what am I going to tell my boss? How am I going to frame this? I'm literally about to leave my job. This is what I've been dreaming of.
This was a seismic shift.
Yeah.
We were prepared, really, like, oh my God, this is the moment.
We didn't see the cons.
Well.
Really?
There
were none.
In the moment, there weren't any, except for we had to move to Rhode Island. We're in Charlotte, moving to Rhode Island. Keep in mind, you're talking to a Southern Belle over here who has never left the Southeast. And she hates the cold.
I can't even believe I'm marrying a Northerner.
That's a conversation for another day. But there's two things that Sierra hates. Being hungry and being cold.
Yeah.
And I remember that once we sort of came around the idea of moving up north, Sierra started looking up on TikTok and looking at the weather and looking at all of like the things that you can.
I was having mental breakdowns every day.
She was struggling.
And I think, a big reason, even deeper than obviously, the weather, was when we set out to start doing culture, a big part of it for me and what I was really excited about was to build a community and be able to throw events and network people. And that's something that I'm excited to be able to do eventually here in Charlotte. But when you move to a new place, you're starting over from square one. You know nothing about it. You know no one there. And I think that would have crushed me mentally, physically, spiritually, all of it.
Absolutely. And so over the next 2 weeks, we are now going back and forth between Mark and Barry discussing the details of the agreement. We finalized the numbers, the details of the agreement via email, and we all agree to hop on a call because they were going to help us relocate. And so now we're at the stage of them literally helping us pick areas to move to. Like, when I tell you on how close this deal was coming to fruition, it was that close.
So it's a Saturday morning. We're on the phone in a corner in our bedroom because my parents are downstairs and they have no idea. And my mom, if I move any farther from her and I'm only an hour and a half from her, she would be crushed. So I still haven't told my mom. I'm like working up the courage to be able to do that. And we're on the phone with Mark, and Mark's like, I relocate a lot of people for our business. And normally they come to these apartments. And I'm like, apartment? We live in a 3-bedroom house. We have 2 dogs at the time. I was like, an apartment? You're going to stick me in the cold in an apartment now? So I'm like, I feel a tear roll down the side of my cheek. And I'm like, oh God, it's getting worse. But, you know, I suck it up and we're like, great. Great. This all sounds great. And, you know, we get off the phone and he's like, I'm going to email you the details later. We get off the phone and it's finally just Jared and I. And we're like, okay, are we really prepared to do this? And
hell fucking yeah.
We're like, yeah, we're tired of being broke, being in the same spot that we've been in for months now. We really need, I felt like we needed something big to really propel us forward. And Jared and I are those people that, like, we're not super type A planners. Sometimes we need to be in a high stress and fast paced environment.
Sink or swim, baby. Sink or swim.
We need to be like thrown out into the ocean.
We,
you
know, thrive in that.
So we're like, this move, it's gonna make me grow up. I'm gonna suck it up. I go downstairs, I see my mom, I'm like, I'm gonna release. No, but
so
there was no need.
So just to, so now you guys all understand how serious it was and how close we were. Mm-hmm. And let's just kind of jump and rip the band-aid off. I remember a few days have gone by since that call. And I don't know what happened in between. And to this day, I don't think we ever truly got a real answer. But I get an email from Mark basically saying, thank you, but we're good at this time.
Just as cold as it sounds on this podcast, that's exactly how we read it too.
And
thank you, but no thanks.
I mean, at the time, we were texting back and forth. Like, it was such like a stab in the heart.
I was like, is this spam?
Yeah, I really was like, did he just wake up and have a bad day? Did like someone spit in his food? There has to be more than this. And so I called Mark and I also called Alex, bringing him back into the story on a 3-way call. I said, guys, what the hell? Like, I'm so confused. Like, there was no answer. There's no, here's what you guys could have done better. Here's like, no, like we literally a week ago talked about relocating. And for now, 2 months now at the time, 2 months, mm-hmm. we're planning to move our entire lives. And you just say, we're good?
Well, we're crushed because we just don't know what we did wrong. What could we have done better?
And so this is actually something we talked about before recording this podcast mm-hmm. that actually I really want to really share. There's a difference between failing as an entrepreneur and things that happen to you outside of your control. We didn't fail. Like, I mean, we really are reflective. We are very in tune with where we can grow personally, you know, great self-awareness.
Yeah.
But we didn't fail in that moment when he said, I'm not interested. That was something we could not control because when we look back, there was not more we could have done. We were at the finish line of this deal. We did all of the hard work. We rewrote our business plan to fit what they were looking for. Because one thing we didn't mention is that with this investment, there were going to be what we call drawdowns. So we wouldn't get the $250,000 all at once. We would get $30,000, $50,000, and we would draw it down based off what we actually needed. So we had to create a whole month-by-month, year-by-year plan of how we were going to use the investment. And that's what took the time. Once we put all that together, I mean, guys, this is what I'm talking about. Like, it was so hard. And, you know, Sierra, I'll share with kind of how I felt after that feeling that I had when basically, I got that email.
Mm-hmm.
But after losing that investment, how, in your mind, how do you think we regrouped and moved forward?
Yeah, so this is how I saw it from my perspective. I remember you had a flat tire.
And it's flat?
Yeah, it was. And you were like,
oh, that's right.
Look. I've already had a shitty week. I lost $250,000 and now I have a flat tire. Of course I have a flat tire. When small little things like that add up to all these bigger things, Jared does start to get really frazzled. And it takes a lot for Jared to get actually upset and like really upset to the point of like, you're just not yourself. For me, it's like something very tiny, but for you, it takes a lot. And I remember I called you. And I'm like, hey, do you want me to come get you? your car's at the tire shop. Like, how are you going to get home? And you're like, I'm walking home. Oh my God. Okay. He's walking home. He's really upset. And you're like, I'm going to give Mark a call. Yeah, I was like, you do that. You go give Mark a call. You tell him how you feel. So Jared, on his 40-minute walk home, calls Mark. And
I don't think Mark even answered.
No, but you then called Barry and you just like laid out how you felt.
Yeah.
And I think that was important for you to do because it was like a breakup. Like you really weren't over it because our whole mindset had shifted at that point. We were so prepared to literally drop everything and then.
Not even drop everything. You were already looking at what the first phase is going to look like. We're already seeing our dreams. Like, you know how dreams may be black and white?
Yeah.
We're starting to see color start to appear and like everything come to life. And it's so hard to see that slip away right in front of you. But
so for me, I'm sitting there thinking, okay, I'm already over it. I'm like, I'm still in my 9-to-5 job. Nothing else is really going to physically change for me at this moment. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing and we're going to keep going forward, whatever that looks like. Also, how am I going to be there for Jared now? Because I really felt like you were in a tough spot at this point because you saw like the light at the end of the tunnel and then it just got taken away from you. So I felt like I needed to be there for you and figure out, okay, how are we going to get back on our bike and start pedaling again? Because we just got slammed off.
Yeah, imagine riding your bike down the road. Well, hold on, no, you were riding our bike down the road. We got some ice cream, the wind's hitting your face, and a freaking car comes out of nowhere and just knocks us on our freaking ass.
And so for me, I was already at peace because one thing about me, I believe everything happens for a reason, and I have faith in God. You know, I really pray hard about that move, and every day, nothing ever felt positive for me. I would call my Nana every day, talk to her about it. And she was like, maybe this isn't really y'all's move. Like, the way that you're feeling and discussing it and crying about it so much, like, it's probably not the move for you guys and not the right time. And it was really hard for me to accept, but I was already at that point of, okay, I'm starting to accept it because I was already getting nervous about doing it in the first place. And I think when you have an offer so big and so
life-changing
and you're nervous about it and you have like this like nasty feeling in your stomach of I don't know if I should be doing this,
it's probably not the right move.
And you're like, how could it not be the right move if it's going to change my life? Well, because it's just not where we want it to be.
I really believe that our relationship, I never for a moment in our 7 years of being together thought our relationship was in jeopardy, but I saw a potential future in our relationship that may not have worked out because I pushed so hard for us to move.
Yeah.
And I think in that moment, you know, of it not working out, I forgot about the flat tire, to be honest with you, but I had a flat tire and walked home from the tire shop. That was great. But I remember that I had to laugh it off. I had to move on. The brand, the vision, everything that we had built already didn't just disappear. They weren't the investors. And I think once I realized that, I put that emotional connection off to the side. I said to myself, man, like everything happens for a reason. And when I say that, it's really important to understand like how I truly felt in that moment. I kept telling myself through all of the bad things that happened along the way, in our journey, I kept telling myself, this is just part of the story I get to tell when I do reach my dreams. And this was a blimp. This was so much experience and things to take away from and learn from. But as I think about this year, not having that investment come through was one of the hardest hits we took. But at first, it did feel like everything we were working toward was slipping away.
Yeah,
it did. But looking back that moment, it did force us to get really clear on what we stood for and what our brand needed to become.
Yeah. Well, I mean, do you remember what happened that next week? Like literally a week later.
Remind me.
We did what we normally would do. Got drinks and we went into our think tank room and we went back to the drawing board and said, okay, where do we go from here? They're gone. But we're still here. And that night we stayed up to like probably 5 a.m. crafting our plan again and figuring out, okay, we have no money, but we can still build a brand.
Right.
We can still do all the things that we want to do. We don't need money. We just have to figure out how we're going
to
do it.
Without that money, we had to get scrappy.
Yeah.
We had to get creative, mm-hmm. and we had to get laser focused.
And that was good for us.
Dude, it was phenomenal. But we had to get laser focused on building a sustainable brand from the ground up without any shortcuts, no safety nets. And I really think by not getting the money and us taking the time to really lock in with what we can control, what we can contribute to making the brand that we want, and then later down the line, we'll reintroduce investor conversations.
Yeah.
Right. And I think in that moment, Sierra, like sometimes the things that look like failures end up being the best things that actually ever happened to you.
Big line. I don't really have anything to say. I do have a couple questions for you, though. Maybe there's someone out there who is getting an opportunity for an investor. How do you know? And we do have an investor now, a new one today. Love them. Have a great relationship with
the team. Yeah.
Fantastic. And that wouldn't have happened if we took the other one. But back to the question, how do you know when it is a good fit as an investor? Maybe you have a couple options on the table where you just have one and you're not sure it's a good fit. How would you tell someone from our personal experience when you know they're the right fit? How do you know when an investor is a good fit for you?
So it comes down to the type of entrepreneur that you are. Mm-hmm. I think if you were an entrepreneur that is purpose driven, I'll answer that. And then if you're an entrepreneur that sees a huge money opportunity, there's that. So I think when you know an investor is a good fit is when they are really focused on you as an individual. They really care about your personal growth. They care about supporting you and your dreams. They don't try to interject too much of changing your mindset or your practice or your vision. They're not trying to change you. They're trying to support you with capital. And I think a lot of times with investors, you know, certain investors are more aggressive with seeing a return on their investment. Some investors are, hey, I'm here to grow with you. I think for you, you need to know on how you respond best. What type of support system do you want behind you? Do you need to answer to people financially that are very aggressive, that need to know where their money's at all times? And does that work with your style? If it does, then hey, they're a good fit. But I think at the end of the day, you're looking for investors that care about you, who understand that this is your baby and they're here to support it and grow. Now, if you're an entrepreneur that has a business that's not so much your passion and a business that's more just financially driven and just a really good idea, then you need to look for the investors that quite frankly have the best network of people. You're looking for investors that do have a bigger bank, because at the end of the day, you're not really relying on building a brand. You're really just building systems, and building systems is a lot easier to scale and see return, but it's less people. Thank you.
So for you and I, we got knocked down pretty hard. That's going to happen to anyone on their entrepreneurial journey. How do you look forward when you take a loss like we did? Or just, I mean, you can relate this to any kind of loss in a business or a personal journey. How do you look forward when you get knocked down like that?
Well, I think the most important thing that we didn't do is we didn't rush. Mm-hmm. We didn't immediately jump into the think tank when we got knocked down.
Yeah.
You have to sort of process what is happening in the moment. If you just kind of jump to the next thing and don't actually take time to reflect and learn and ask hard-hitting questions to yourself, then there's no way to learn from being knocked down. You got knocked down for a reason, right? How did you get knocked down? Why do you get knocked down? Like, you have to ask, like, how did I get here? And by asking those deep questions, you're now going to grow. You're going to like, all right, well, that's not going to happen again. Or here's what I got to change. So I think the most important thing when you are knocked down as an entrepreneur is, go to timeout, go to the corner, reflect, do whatever you got to do to sort of process everything. Mm-hmm. And then when you're ready, which you'll know on your own time, then you'll be ready to take those steps and get back on your horse, get back on the path, and continue the grind. So I think this was, Sierra, on episode 2, Everything Happens for a Reason. I think that you and I are growing as a team on our own show. like, I felt really happy to share something that happened in our life that kind of humanizes our road of to success. Mm-hmm. I think we're successful in the sense that we have found our purpose and our passion. I think that is a form of success. But in terms of where we want to take this brand, we're not anywhere close. And I think sharing stuff like this hopefully allows you guys who are listening to see that, yes, what you see in the camera and what we're building may be really cool and we're doing awesome things, but getting here didn't happen overnight.
No,
it didn't happen. And there's so much for us still to learn about each other. We're still growing. Before even getting behind the camera, this is Dream Culture. We're here to humanize success.
One last thing before we close this out. As we were planning for this episode, it was really hard to not sit back and think, how has my life changed? And Jared and I are moving. In literally 2 weeks, we've not packed a single thing. That goes back to the Type Bs.
Yeah.
But we are moving back closer to the city. And that means we are going to start being more present in the community. I'd say you can't build one without being in it. So I'm so excited to move back. And I think, you know, looking at this whole opportunity and seeing where we are today just made me really excited for that.
Absolutely. Well, I think once again, guys, everything happens for a reason. Once you guys take that leap of faith, you're going to experience failures and you're going to experience things that are out of your control. Just remind yourself, everything happens for a reason.
Well, guys, thank you for tuning into the 5 to 9.
I'm your host, Sierra.
And I am your host, Jared.
Thanks for clocking in.